The Mace, Vingen and Donick, 102.5. The Game, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. Willie Donick, of course, in Stockholm, Sweden, with the Nashville Predators, who will take on the Pittsburgh Penguins in two games, one Friday, one Sunday, as part of the NHL Global Series. So Willie Donick won't be joining us live this week. We will have him on the show at some point, because at the moment it is 11 o'clock at night in Stockholm. Let's wake up Willie.
Hey, let's call Willie.
Let's call Willie. Can we call international on these phones?
We'll try.
I don't want to see that phone bill.
Mm-mm.
I remember the days when I was younger when you had to wait after you had to wait
Six
until
o'clock.
Like nine. Well, for me, it was like 9 o'clock.
Was it?
It was like 9 o'clock to get free minutes.
No, it was like 6 when it first came out, 6, 7 o'clock.
So maybe we'll wake up Willie at some point this week.
So he can get some free minutes?
Yes. Get some free minutes. Maybe he has to call us since it's later over there than it is over here.
He would have to do that.
But Willie, we'll catch up with Willie over the course of the week as the Predators are in Stockholm, Sweden. But before the Predators left for Stockholm, Sweden last night, they played the New York Rangers, and they lost bad. The Predators lost 6-3. To the New York Rangers last night at Madison Square Garden in a totally predictable result. Let me read something to you from my friend Dan Rosen of NHL.com, who covered the game last night for NHL.com. Quote, "The Rangers lost their first 7 home games, scoring 6 goals and getting shut out 5 times. They scored 5 goals before the second intermission Monday, with 3 coming on 4 shots in the second period." That was totally predictable. I had a feeling all day long that the Predators were going to get pummeled by the New York Rangers because of all of those stats about the Rangers struggling at home and not winning at home and being shut out 5 times in 7 games at home. I knew the Predators were going to get bludgeoned by the Rangers, and that's exactly what happened. I do want to give a quick shout out, though, to Matthew Wood. Had a hat trick last night. He's been playing really well. He may be the only thing worth watching when it comes to the Predators this season, the only player worth watching. So congratulations to Matthew Wood on the hat trick. Unfortunately, his hat trick was overshadowed by just another uninspiring performance from the Nashville Predators. And I know that Willie Donick doesn't like talking about this, but it needs to be said. It needs to be reiterated. The Predators need to fire Andrew Brunette. As far as I'm concerned, the results of the two games in Sweden shouldn't matter. When the Predators land back stateside, Andrew Brunette should be fired. And this is not the first time I've called from Andrew Brunette's firing. It was roughly a year ago. I sat in this chair. We were on at a different time. But I sat in this chair and explained why I would fire Andrew Brunette. So this is not a new feeling for me. I have felt this way for a while. And it's just, it just gets harder and harder and harder to watch the Nashville Predators play on a nightly basis. And I do because it's part of my job. And for more than 7 years, I covered the team every day, and I had to watch a lot of Predators games. The Predators have lost 8 of 9. They are 1-6-2 in their past 9 games. The one win came against the worst team in the NHL, the Calgary Flames. And the Predators are not that far ahead of the Calgary Flames in the standings. I am going to quote myself from X last night. "This franchise has more problems than the coach, but it must show its fans that these results will not be tolerated before they tune out." And multiple people, Derek, responded to that post and said, "I've already tuned out." And that's a dangerous thing if you are a sports franchise. The last thing that you want is your fans not to care. And multiple people pointed out to me last night that it's hard to watch the Predators play because FanDuel Sports Network is not readily available. And when your team is struggling as badly as the Predators are, people aren't going to go out of their way to find FanDuel Sports Network and watch the Predators. So as I just said, this team has far more problems than the coach. But it's going to take more than just a couple of days, a couple of weeks, a couple of months to fix what's going on with this franchise. The Predators need to, as I just said, show their fans that they know that these results are unacceptable. And the longer that Barry Trotz continues to stand by Andrew Brunette, the worse it looks for Barry Trotz. And by the way, Barry Trotz will not be joining us today because the team is in Sweden. So we will not be speaking to Barry Trotz this week. He will rejoin us next week when the team returns to the U.S. The longer that Barry Trotz stands by Andrew Burnett, the worse it is for Barry Trotz. And Derek, I've said this to you before, that when the Predators rehired Barry Trotz, people were thrilled because people around here love Barry Trotz. I love Barry Trotz. He is a fabulous man. He is great to talk to. We all adore Barry Trotz, the human being. But when it comes to Barry Trotz, the GM, when he arrived here, he had a bit of a force field, I thought, built around him because he's Barry Trotz. And quite frankly, a lot of Predators fans were tired of David Poile. So Barry Trotz came in with a lot of goodwill. Barry Trotz put together a team that overachieved, that made the playoffs, and things were great. But now that force field has been disintegrated. And Predators fans are upset at Barry Trotz about the moves that he's made, signing Steven Stamkos, signing Brady Shea, signing Jonathan Marchessault, all of these signing, re-signing UC Saros, and standing by Andrew Burnett. And the easiest thing for the Predators to do is to fire the coach. And again, it's not all on Burnett. But let me just share some numbers for you. The Predators have played 100 games since the start of last season. That's a nice round number. The Predators have won 35 games since the start of last season. 35 out of 100. The Predators have been held to two or fewer goals in 57 of those 100 games. That leads the NHL since the start of last season. The process does look a little better. You may not believe it based on the record and what you saw last night. Last night was not good. But the process, if you look under the hood, is a little bit better. But it's hard to sell that when the Predators are only 1 point better through 18 games than they were a year ago when they started 0-5. The Predators are 5-9-4. That's 14 points. Last season, they were 5-10-3. That's 13 points. So I know that if Willie was awake right now, it's 11:08 p.m. in Sweden. If Willie were awake right now, he would not like this conversation. Because Willie said yesterday that he thinks that people around here are too quick to place all of the blame on the coach. I am not placing all of the blame on what's happening with the Predators on Andrew Burnett. Barry Trotz deserves a lot of blame too. But if the Predators want to demonstrate to their fan base that, hey, we know that this is unacceptable, someone needs to be made an example of. And that's and it's easy. It's quote-unquote easy. It's never easy to fire someone. Trotz and Burnett go way back. Trotz believes in Burnett. Coached Burnett, really likes Burnett. It's not. It wouldn't be easy for Barry Trotz to fire Andrew Burnett. But the old saying is, you can't fire the player, so you've got to fire the coach. So I think the Predators, I think the Predators are in a danger zone right now, Derek, because they have been bad. They were bad last season. They're bad this season. You know, they're in danger of missing the playoffs. I want to say it's 3 out of the past 4 years, if my math is right. And look, I know that Predators fans are passionate. I absolutely know that they are passionate. I covered the team. I know a lot of the fans. I know a lot of you. I know that you are passionate about the team. But the Predators are in the worst place to be right now. They're bad. There seems to be no hope of getting better. And I think that Andrew Burnett, as bluntly as I can put it, I think Andrew Burnett needs to be sacrificed. I think I think the Predators need to demonstrate to their fans that they know that this isn't good enough, and I think that means letting go of Burnett.
Yeah, I would put it this way. Listen, with this group of guys, and, you know, where their age, maybe Coach Burnett is not the right coach for this group of guys. Because, you know, if nothing happens, you're talking about, let's say if they don't facilitate a trade to get one of these, you know, older guys out of here, you're talking about at least the next 3 years with all of these guys, somewhere around there. And then, you know, their top guys are getting older. So I think ultimately it's something that Barry's going to have to do. Because, listen, it's not all Andrew Burnett's fault. It's not. Everybody takes a slice of this pie. Everybody. From the GM to the coach to the players. Everybody takes a slice of this pie. And I'm not saying that Coach Bruno should take a big slice of the pie. But we know where the big slice of the pie lies. That's with the players. But we're going to sacrifice a small price, meaning small slice, in order to try to, you know, make the pie better than what it is, in a sense. So I don't want to see it happen. But like Brian Callahan, it's, okay, we've seen it. It hadn't gotten any better. These guys are not getting any younger. We have a bunch of guys that are either, you know, in the minors or some young guys that are playing for us now. We need to make that transition. And the only way we can make that transition, I believe, is to do away with the head coach. Again, I'm not advocating for him being fired, but I just don't think time has shown. Is he a good coach? I think he's a good coach, but he's not a good coach for this team. I think where this team is at, they need a different type of coach. I said that about the Tennessee Titans and who I wanted as a head coach moving forward. I don't want somebody that's just learning how to do job. I want somebody that knows how to do the job, has experience at doing a job, has been through it all or just about it all, and he's won and has lost. Maybe the Predators need more of a stern guy. Maybe they need a guy to start to really sort of challenge these veteran players. Maybe the voice in the locker room has gotten stale in a sense. I understand that Brady Shea the other day came out and said, listen, those small things are on players. I get it. I know it's on players. But the fans don't want to hear that. They want to hear, y'all can't. Yeah, of course you're taking, you know, you're taking the blame. You can't go anywhere. So what do we do? Or what can happen? Well, the coach is the guy that ultimately ends up getting a short stick because he's had his opportunity, they feel, and he hasn't made this organization or this team any better than what they were when he got the job.
My gut tells me that if the Predators do make a coaching change, they will make Luke Richardson the interim coach. Luke Richardson is the associate coach. He was hired over the summer, former head coach of the Chicago Blackhawks. It's the easy thing to do. I know there are Predators fans out there who are hoping that if the Predators make a coaching change, they call Pete DeBoer, because Pete DeBoer has had a lot of success. He had success with the Dallas Stars and the San Jose Sharks and the Vegas Golden Knights and the New Jersey Devils. He's a winning coach. I wonder if Pete DeBoer would sign up for this situation. And
why would he take the job midstream, though? That's one of those things where I'm not taking the job because he's one of those guys. He don't need to take the job right now. He doesn't. You know, so I wouldn't take a job midstream. I would wait till the season play itself out because I don't want to be any part of what's going on now if I'm a coach on the outside looking
right in. So the interesting thing is, if the Predators make a coaching change, what do they prioritize? Mm-hmm. Do they prioritize experience? Because if Steven Stamkos and Ryan O'Reilly and Brady Shea and Jonathan Marchessault and Philip Forsberg and Roman Josi are still around and they're all under contract, do you try to find a veteran coach to get the most?
I'm going to ask you this question before you finish that.
Sure.
Do you think Lavi could coach this team?
Oh, God.
I'm saying with his personality, I think he would be more of a fit for this team.
It's an interesting point. I can't imagine the Predators would rehire him.
No, I'm not saying rehiring him, but I'm just saying someone like him.
But that's my point, yeah. Is do you value a coach with experience like mm-hmm. Laviolette or Pete DeBoer, or do you find a younger coach that can grow, a younger coach who can grow with the team? Do you prioritize developing the youth, or do you prioritize getting the most out of the veterans you have on your roster, which is, I think, an interesting question that the Predators could have to answer. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHunted.com, and welcome in Andrew. Andrew, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys, just kind of talking a little bit about the Preds and sure. just thinking back. You know, obviously, you know, I'm a Nashville born, bred, raised, so I remember the Predators in 98 when they came. I guess I was in elementary school, and Trotz always talked about, like, the Predator way. But in my opinion, I feel like this team in the NHL has changed the way they play the game since 98, and the Predator way just really doesn't work anymore. I think that Predator way has to evolve in order for this team to take the next step. We need to become a younger team. Yeah, we had a great run with this core. I love this core, and this core will always hold a special place in my heart as a fan, but you also kind of have to figure out when to move on. I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you, Andrew. And look, if the Predators, and we'll get back to the Predators. We're going to have Trevor Maddich on in a couple of minutes, so we'll take a breather on the Predators and get back to them after Trevor. So I'll just say this quickly. The Predators are going to get to a point where they're going to just have to start selling guys off. And as hard as it would be for the Predators, I think, it starts with Ryan O'Reilly. I can only imagine how this team would play without Ryan O'Reilly. Mm-hmm. I think it starts with O'Reilly. Who the hell knows if you can find someone to take Steven Stamkos off your hands? I'm sure you can find someone to take Jonathan Marchessault off your hands. Like, we're getting to that point. We're getting to that point. You can already see it in the national media. They're talking about the players the Predators could trade. We will get back to the Predators. So we will continue to take your reaction to the Predators' loss, their eighth in nine games last night in New York, 615-737-1025. But we will put it on pause for just a moment as we bring in Trevor Maddich. He'll join us. We'll talk college football and the NFL with Trevor coming up next, 615-737-1025. DVD is presented by Bax Homeworks Remodeling Done Right. Get a free estimate at baxhomeworks.com. D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Derek Mason, Adam Vingen. Pleased to be joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by Trevor Maddich, who is brought to you each week by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trevor, the latest CFP rankings, if I'm not mistaken, come out tonight. We're expecting Vanderbilt to move up because the two teams directly in front of Vanderbilt, UVA and Louisville, lost over the weekend. But I want to ask you specifically about the Commodores' defense. The defense has struggled in the past 2 weeks against Texas and Auburn. I think we can all agree the problem against Texas was that the Commodores couldn't tackle. A lot of Arch Manning's passing yards came after the catch. But when you look at the Commodores' defense over the past 2 weeks, they've allowed they're averaging nearly 500 yards allowed over these past 2 weeks. What stands out to you about maybe something that's not working that was working earlier in the season?
Well, I think to start with, they're not doing a very good job of stopping the run. You know, they're about mid-level in the SEC, but they've got to do better than that. And when you're not stopping the run, that means the pass can get going. And they're one of the worst teams in the SEC at giving up big passes. And you know, Texas had some big plays against them. I mean, even Auburn threw the ball well, though. That's pretty weird because Auburn doesn't throw the ball well against anybody. But I think when you come down to it, what you want if you're Auburn is to be able to be more secure in slowing down the run so play action passes aren't quite so solid. And then they need to be able to – I'm sorry, there's a big group of people going by, and, of course, they're all talking as loud as they possibly can. I don't know if you guys can hear that, but then they've got to somehow slow down the big plays. So that comes with tackling and busted assignments and things like that, which are not characteristic of Vanderbilt.
The one thing that I am looking for, other than where Vanderbilt is in the CFP rankings tonight, Trevor, is how far the BYU Cougars fall after losing over the weekend, because I think there will be a domino effect depending on how far the committee puts BYU down the pecking order after losing to Texas Tech. How far do you think BYU should fall after losing to Texas Tech?
Well, my guess is they'll fall to around 12 or so because the score looked bad. It was, 29-7, I think. But when the committee digs deeper into that loss to Texas Tech, they won't hate it as much as I think the BYU fans do. The defense of BYU was largely magnificent. I mean, it didn't get any takeaways, but they only allowed two touchdowns to Texas Tech on a day when the BYU offense and special teams were playing very poorly. And I think that's a big part of what the committee is looking for. Is this team worthy of being a potential playoff team? And you want to look at how the team performs. And so Texas Tech was held to over 100 yards under their normal yardage per game. They scored 29 points. They averaged 42. So I think the committee will see a sign of hope with the BYU defense. The offense got completely shut down, and there was nothing that they could do. And the committee won't like that at all. But at the same time, this is on the road to one of the best teams in the country. So my guess is they'll go down around 12 or 13. But the thing that you need to worry about, though, is not getting to number 12 or even 11. Because right now, the highest-ranked ACC teams are outside the top 12. If the ACC champion finishes outside the top 12 in the final ranking, they still will move up and bounce number 12 out of the playoff, because the top five highest-ranked conference champions get an automatic berth no matter where they're ranked. Group of five champion will be one of those automatic berths, and right now there's no group of five team that's in the top 20. So if this keeps going the way it's looking, it's very possible that two teams will finish 11 and 12 in the committee's final ranking, and they won't make the playoff because conference champions ranked lower than them will jump up and bounce them out. So, you know, you don't just need to look at the teams ahead of you and who has to lose and who do you have to jump. You've got to worry about teams behind you too.
Trevor Maddich is with us. Trevor, earlier in the program, we were talking about how the fact that the Titans are in the driver's seat to have the number one overall pick again. And we were discussing a story written on Saturday morning by Pete Thamel at ESPN, polling NFL scouts and executives on the top quarterback in the upcoming draft class. And Fernando Mendoza was the runaway winner in this poll conducted by Pete Thamel. So the question I had for Derek, and I would love your opinion on this, do you think Fernando Mendoza is the type of quarterback worth trading up to number one overall for if the Titans have the number one overall pick and are soliciting offers?
Yeah, that's a great question, because the thing about taking quarterbacks that high is statistically it's a 50-50 roll of the dice. In other words, you got a 50% chance of that quarterback being good enough for your team that you offer him a second contract on the same team. That doesn't mean they can't go somewhere else and eventually become good, but it means that there's a 50-50 shot that this guy is your long-term franchise quarterback. It's a flip of the coin. That's all it is. Now, if you're going to take the risk, I think Fernando Mendoza is probably the best risk of the quarterbacks in this year's draft potentially. Now, keep in mind that the top three guys that most scouts are saying are the top three, Mendoza, Dante Moore of Oregon, Ty Simpson of Alabama, are guys that could come back next year, and they all probably should come back next year for various reasons. But when you look at Mendoza and how he's performed this year, he's a big guy. He's like 6'5", like 230. You know, he's got a big enough arm. He's got tremendous ball placement and accuracy. He doesn't get rattled when the pressure is on the way. He has made huge throws in critical moments, like the game winner against Iowa, which was Oregon played Iowa. Penn State, that's it. That was just a dime in the back of the end zone. That'll be one of the completions of the year in college football. But that was under tremendous pressure. And he's got all of those tangibles and intangibles that you would want in a starting quarterback. If I needed a quarterback, you know, if I'm the Browns, if I'm the Raiders, possibly the Cardinals, there's teams out there, maybe the Saints. We'll see how Tyler Shuck does. But if I'm a team that needs a quarterback and I could trade up to get the first pick in the draft, there's no question in my mind that the guy I would want to pick is Fernando Mendoza.
Now, headed back to college, Trevor, because there's two teams I think that are interesting in this, Notre Dame and Texas. I get it, Notre Dame, their schedule is easy. They got Syracuse and I forgot who the last, Stanford. So those are wins. Then you have Texas, who have two remaining games that are hard. What I'm interested in is a 9-3 Texas or a 6-2 or 8-2, what would it be? 9-2 Notre Dame. Who gets in?
You know, it all depends on what the committee thinks the quality wins were. Mm-hmm. The thing about Texas is that performing in the SEC, top to bottom, that's a more difficult schedule than what Notre Dame can put out there. And Notre Dame already has lost to two of the best three teams that they played. You know, the opener was Miami, then they lost to Texas A&M, and that was by a combined total of 4 points with a true freshman quarterback. And the committee will take that into account. But if you're just looking at resumes and things like that, Texas already has a win against Oklahoma. Oklahoma's going to finish, you know, ranked fairly highly. They've got a tough schedule going forward as well. That win over Vandy is a quality win. And then they've got Georgia coming up and then Texas A&M to wrap up the season. And so if they're going to finish as a two-loss team, they're going to wrap up beating Georgia and Texas A&M in two of the last three. And so I don't think there's any question that the committee is going to see that as a much better strength of resume than Notre Dame will be able to bring up. See, Notre Dame's got another problem, though. Notre Dame's big problem, at least I think it should be a problem, I guess it's not to the committee, is head-to-head with Miami. The committee has largely respected head-to-head wins amongst teams that have the same or similar schedule. Miami and Notre Dame both have two losses. Miami has a higher quality win than Notre Dame because they beat Notre Dame, who's ranked in the vicinity of 10th. We'll see where they are coming up this week. Whereas Notre Dame's best win was USC, which is ranked down, you know, lower than 15. And when you look at strength of schedule, strength of record, metrics that the committee takes into account, they're very similar between the two teams. So why is it that Miami is ranked so far behind Notre Dame when the record's exactly the same and Miami beat Notre Dame head-to-head? That's something I want to see explained because I don't get that. But at the same time, if I am the committee, to answer your question, Derek, if I am torn between Notre Dame and Texas, if they both finish with two losses, I'm absolutely taking Texas because Notre Dame wouldn't be able to remotely touch Texas's quality wins.
Now, say a 9-3 Texas or a 10-2 Vanderbilt.
Oof.
I understand Texas beat Vanderbilt. I get it. But yet, and still, yeah. Vandy would have the better record.
Yeah, you're right about that. And it depends on how well the committee, you know, you're saying Texas is 10-3?
Texas is 9-3. Vandy's 10-2.
9-3. Yeah. Okay, so in that case, see, I'm inclined, I'm like you, I want to know what you think, Derek, because I'm inclined to give tremendous respect to the head-to-head win. And if one team has two losses, one team has three, but, you know, there's a head-to-head win by the three-team loss or two-team loss over the – anyway, you know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
I want to go with head-to-head. But at the same time, the committee in the past has taken a one-loss difference to be enough to erase the head-to-head victory by the team that got that win. And so, if you look at wins by Vanderbilt, right? Mm-hmm. If they win out the rest of the way, they've lost to Alabama, they've lost to Texas. What's their best win? Well, best win, they beat LSU. Probably Missouri is their best win. And that's a quality win. But they're going to have to play at Tennessee to wrap up the season. And if Vanderbilt beats Tennessee and they have two losses, Texas has three losses, if it's me, I take Texas because of the head-to-head. But I think the committee would take Vanderbilt because of the better record and the recency bias of seeing them win in Knoxville.
Yeah, I look at it from this standpoint with Vanderbilt because I think the South Carolina win was held against them because Lenoris didn't finish the game. I think, you know, going up to Blacksburg, Virginia, beating Virginia Tech, I think that was a big win. But listen, Virginia Tech's not ranked. And then you look at Alabama, that was a closer game than what the score tells us. And get it, I know they have a loss against Texas, but I just think Vandy's close losses are being counted against them, whereas Texas Texas close losses, or even teams above them are counted as wins for them and not for Vandy. So I think I would take a 10-2 Vandy over a 9-3 Texas. I think Texas is a good team, but I think Vandy has shown more consistency than Texas have.
Yeah, well, when you look at last year, SMU played in the ACC championship game and they lost. But the committee put them in anyway, and the biggest reason is that SMU came storming back in the, from being way down in the fourth quarter and almost won that game. Mm-hmm. And the committee spokesperson said at the time of the final ranking that they respected the fact that SMU came back like they did. Only a playoff-worthy team could do something like that. And they put SMU in the playoff. And Vandy, when you look at that Texas loss, Derek, they lost that game by a field goal, right? But Texas was up 34-10 at the start of the fourth quarter. Vandy ripped off three straight touchdowns unanswered by Texas. Vandy's defense stopped Texas on their two drives, including with less than 4 minutes to go. Vandy had scored a touchdown on a long pass on a busted coverage, and Texas had a chance with 4 minutes to go to run out the clock at that point. But they ran four plays and punted, so Vandy's defense stepped up. And then Vandy went down and scored another touchdown, and, of course, Vandy tried an onside kick, and they came within inches of recovering that, but it ended up going out of bounds before they could secure it. But the committee, I think, if they're consistent, will treat a loss like that the same way they treated SMU's loss in the ACC championship game last year as roaring back against a really good team and showed that they are worthy to be a playoff team. So if Vandy finishes with two losses, which means they still, you know, will have to beat Kentucky, and that's not that that can be a tricky game. But then win that game at Tennessee, you know, I think the committee won't hate the loss to Texas. They won't hate the loss to Alabama either. I mean, I think they're in decent shape.
Trevor Maddich has been our guest on D-Mace, Ving, and Adonik. He joins us every Tuesday and is brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trevor, great stuff as always. We'll catch up next week.
Thanks, guys.
615-737-1025. We have reaction from our previous conversation about the Predators, so we will get back to that. If you have any thoughts on the Nashville Predators, who have lost 8 of their past 9 games after being blown out last night by the New York Rangers, let us know. 615-737-1025. Derek Mason and Adam Vingen. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 1025 the game. Derek Mason and Adam Vingen here. Dolly Parton always puts me in a good mood. Always. 9 to 5. We don't work 9 to 5. We work 3 to 6. And I'm wondering if Andrew Burnett needs to find another job. Speaking of working 9 to 5, I said at the top of the hour, it's time. It's past time. I said it around a year ago now that the Predators should have fired Andrew Burnett. And after last night's showing, I quite frankly, I find it hard to defend Burnett. And I understand Willie's defense, which is how much of this is on the coach, how much of this is on the players. Well, they work in concert. And Derek, you made the point yesterday that the coach is supposed to give you that little extra oomph. And Brunette hasn't done that. Wes in Hermitage on our text line says, I am so done with Steven Stamkos. Get him out. That will be difficult, Wes. Wes also says, I understand the Brunette firing talk, but I think this is on Trotz. As a coach, you can only coach the players that your GM puts on your roster. Trotz knew what the plan for the players was and got the wrong guys for the coach. I'm starting to think I hate GM Trotz, but I love Coach Trotz. Maybe he's not a good general manager.
Well, people have to separate the two. Listen, when he first took the job, you know, his career here as a coach bled into, you know, how people felt about him as a GM, a first-time GM. And he's been upfront, he's been honest, transparent in where this team is at, where he wants to go with this team. And, you know, he it wasn't a rebuild mode for him. He was trying to keep this team. And I get it from a player standpoint, where, you know, those veteran guys in the locker room, it's not fair to them. That and guys that are still that still have years left, and I'm talking about Forsberg and those guys that have been here prior to Brady Shea and all those guys coming. It's almost like you owe them to keep a competitive roster while they're here, and I get that part, and I know it's hard to try to make that turnover, and that's what Barry has tried to do. Now, listen, it hadn't worked, and. You know, it's been colossal from this standpoint, is that these guys are, it's not like a one-year deal like football. Like 1 year or 2 years and we can get out of it second year. It's no bad. Okay, we eat it. We made a mistake. We can move on. It's not that way.
Nope.
You can't do it. And that's the unfortunate part, because when you take a swing or several big swings like this, there's a part of you that has to believe that if this doesn't work, what do I do? What do we do as a franchise? And I'm sure that Barry thought about all of this. Now, ultimately, it may end up in him having to fire the court, meaning the head coach, or having to dismiss the head coach. And this, maybe it should have been done at the end of last season for this point, because there was a point where it was like, Bruno was just throwing his hands up like, man, I've tried everything with this team. I've tried lineups. I tried doing this. And we still are not getting the production that we need. And then Barry, you know, at the end of the season, how he went, you know, he had to talk to Pelaier several times I'm sure it had to do with the coach and where this franchise is going and everything else. You're talking to your key guys that you feel are going to be here. So I think that's when the move should have been made.
There, I went to the game on Saturday, and I was sitting in Andrew Brunette's post-game news conference, and there was a word that Brunette used in the news conference. Anytime I hear a coach say this word, or some form of this word, my alarm bells go off. He was talking about the loss to the Stars. He called it unexplainable. You're the coach. Nothing should be unexplainable. If you don't have the answers, that is always a concern to me. I'll always remember this. When I was a young reporter, we're going back 15 years at this point, I covered the Washington Capitals before I moved here to Nashville to cover the Predators. And the Capitals were getting off to a really bad start. Bruce Boudreau was their coach. And they lost a game in Buffalo, and it wasn't particularly close, if I recall correctly. And I wasn't on the road. I was covering, you know, the team on a freelance basis, so I was watching the game, and I watched the news conference after the game on the broadcast. And a reporter asked Boudreau something about the direction of the Capitals, what can he do to help them get out of this? And he said, I don't know. And as soon as I heard that, I said, he's getting fired, and he did. Like, when a coach says, I don't know, it's unexplainable, I can't explain it, it's inexplicable, whatever word you want to use, that always freaks me out a little bit. Because you're the coach. You're supposed to have the answers. So, to the point that Wes was making about Barry Trotz. And again, we will not have Barry Trotz on the program today because the team is in Sweden. So he will not be joining us at 5 o'clock as he usually does on Tuesdays. When the Predators went out last summer and signed Stamkos and Marchessault and Shea, I came in here, I was filling in, I came in here the next day and I said, my floor for this team this coming season, which was last season, was you got to win two rounds of the playoffs. And people were like, huh? I remember you and Willie talking about it. And you were like, was he talking about this coming season or in a few seasons? No, I meant that season, last season, because this team is old. Like, you had to strike when the iron was hot. If you're signing Stamkos and Marchessault and Shea, and you've got Forsberg and Yossi and O'Reilly, they're all, you know, in their early to mid-30s, you've got to strike quickly because they're going to keep getting older. They're going to keep moving out of their prime. And they missed that opportunity by a wide margin last season, and it looks like they're going to do so again this season. So that was my point. Like, you can't convince me, because Barry Trotz has used this line many times. He's buying time. I signed Stamkos and O'Reilly and Marchessault and Shea to buy time as I build my next core. You cannot convince me that when Barry Trotz made his sales pitch to Steven Stamkos, he sold Steven Stamkos on, hey, come here. We might be good. We might not be. But, you know, play for a few years until Matthew Wood is ready. I don't think Matthew – well, I think they had just drafted Matthew Wood at that point. Anyway, my point is Steven Stamkos, I know he's been struggling, but he had plenty of offers. He would not have signed here if he didn't think the Predators were competing. So I think Barry – like, this is something I will always wonder, Derek. And I know it's hindsight, and I know it's dangerous, but I will always think about this. Did the Predators' 18-game point streak 2 seasons ago that propelled them into the playoffs, was that a detriment to the long-term vision of the franchise? Did that 18-game point streak and that surprise playoff appearance give Barry Trotz and the Predators more hope than it should have that this team was closer to competing than it actually was? I will always wonder that. And that was a great run. We loved that run, the U2 thing. That was our favorite thing. We ate it all up. But sometimes I wonder, would they have been better off being bad? Maybe then the Predators would have realized, like, this half-in, half-out stuff, it doesn't work. It didn't work for David Poile, and it's not working for Barry Trotz. And I want to point out one thing as well. Eric Francis, who reports on the Calgary Flames for Sportsnet, wrote a story about the Calgary Flames, who are the worst team in the league, and the fact that they do need high-end scorers. He has a list of all of the top scorers in the NHL, so the top players in points. And I'm just going to rattle off some of these names, and I'm going to tell you where they were picked in the draft. Nathan MacKinnon, first overall. Leo Carlson of Anaheim, second overall. Connor Bedard, first overall. Macklin Celebrini, first overall. William Nylander, 8th overall. Jack Eichel, 2nd overall. Cale Makar, 4th overall. Connor McDavid, 1st overall. Mark Scheifele, 7th overall. And so on and so forth. The Predators need a player like that so desperately. And this is a conversation for the offseason, but it's sort of like where we are now. The Predators cannot continue to fool themselves that they can be competitive. And the best thing for them, I will repeat this until I am old and gray. I'm already starting to gray, so we're getting there. The Predators will not get better until they allow themselves to get worse, meaningfully worse. I'm not talking about what we're watching right now. We're a competitive team. Let me rephrase that. Where a team that was expecting to be competitive is flailing all over the ice. I'm not talking about that kind of worse. I am talking about the kind of worse where you're not making the playoffs for 3, 4, 5 years in a row. The Predators have really never had that, and I think it's desperately missing. And I'm curious to see if these few days in Sweden maybe this could be this season's version of the canceled U2 concert, the trip to Sweden. And if the Predators turn it around, you know what? We'll all write about that trip to Sweden and how they bonded and how they came together and they said, screw you, Vingan, and other people who were doubting them. And they all came together and they won and it was a grand old time. But I'm not convinced.
I don't think you can look at that season, which was the 23-24 season.
Yes.
And say, well, maybe that. In hindsight, maybe that wasn't good for the franchise. There's nothing they could do with stopping that run that they went on. And when you do that as an organization, you do want to build on that because you're looking and you're saying, even in that, you know, 18-19 point streak that they had, even in that, you felt that, okay, if we would have added, if we add one or two more guys to certain positions, then we can be better than what we are showing now and some of these younger guys that are showing that they can play, we can mesh them in with these older guys that we go out and get, or these 1-2 pieces we go out and get, and we will be more of a complete team. So I don't fault Barry Trotz for looking at that season and saying, you know what, we got something good here. Because, again, you're talking about veteran guys, Forsberg, those guys, Yossi, that was a part of this. So what do you want to do? You want to say, okay, I want to add to this so we can continue that winning. And maybe it was the wrong move to make, maybe not. But I don't want to take that one isolated, you know, sort of frame in their season and say, well, maybe it probably would have been better had they not had that. Because then they would have been probably more closer to saying, hey, listen, we need to just scrap all this and sort of project for the future. It's unfair, at least I think so, to look at that and say, well, maybe they should have done that. Because when you're in the moment, it's like, how can we make this team better, not how can we make this team worse?
615-737-1025. We have plenty of reaction. We will get to it. 615-737-1025. Also, an update on Legarius Sneed's legal issues. We will get to that as well coming up next. 615-737-1025. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.